you're here. Fellowship's sweeter, knowing you're near. It's so good to see you. I hope that it's fair. Everyone loves you. We're glad you're here.
Reading from Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 through 26. You have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with his brother will be subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to his brother, Raca, is answerable to the Sanhedrin. But anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you are offering your gift at the altar and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First go and be reconciled to your brother, then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who is taking you to court. Do it while you are still with him on the way, or he may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you may be thrown into prison. And I tell you the truth, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny. That's Matthew 5, 21 through 26.
Oh, magnify the Lord with me. Let us exalt his name together. It is Friday, February 7th, 2025. That voice was Tad Jagish, and he read from Matthew chapter 5, verses 21 through 24, which will be some of the background on our discussion today about Jesus helping us resolve conflicts, conflict resolution. And I was thinking about the resolution. Have you continued to practice the resolutions you laid down in January? Now's the time when many either fade or they feel like they failed and have stopped doing it, but there's time to start it up again. Hey, it's February, and you can start at any time. A practice of reading through the scripture or participating by volunteering or doing something good. So if you feel like you failed or didn't measure up to the resolutions you were going to make in 2025, start again. And today we're going to look at what? Navigating, Jason, through conflicts?
We're going to look at how we handle this Jesus way, because as the followers of Jesus, I think that that's what we need to do. And I think that, at least for me, I've not experienced a place in time where it feels like there's not more division and more opportunity for us to divide. Or, you know, I mean, we've got the left and the right. Now we've got the uber left and the uber right. We've got not just conservative or liberal, but we've got ultra conservative and ultra liberal. And don't give it much more time and we'll have ultra uber liberal and ultra uber conservative. And when we do that, what we really do is we continue to push away from one another. The farther we kind of push into these tribes, we push into these places, the farther we push away from one another. And by the way, one another is where Jesus wants us to be, isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, 28 times in the New Testament, Jesus gives us one another's, these ideas and opportunities for us to remember and be reminded that our unity is one of the most important things that we have. It's one of the most important witnesses that we have to the world. When Jesus teaches his disciples, he says, they will know that you are my disciples by what? By your love for one another. Even in the midst of disagreement, even in the midst of trouble, even in the midst of consternation. When Jesus prays in John 17, the most substantive prayer that we have of Jesus in the scriptures, what does he pray for?
Being one.
Being one. He prays for unity. He prays that we would be one as he, the Father, and the Son are one. And so I think it's really important to Jesus. And Jesus' way ought to be important to us. In fact, as the people of Jesus who come as ambassadors of our King, it shouldn't be our way. It should be the King's way. Because who do we represent?
The King.
King Jesus.
We represent Jesus. And so we need to make sure that we sharpen ourselves in what Jesus' way of doing things is, so that we can make sure that we understand, even when we think we're right. You know, what do we do then with our righteousness? And so let's begin in Matthew chapter 5, verses 21. And it says, you have heard that it was said. Now, this is interesting because Matthew chapter 5 kicks off the Sermon on the Mount. And it begins, it says, when he saw the crowds, he went up on the mountaintop and he sat down and his disciples came to him and he began to teach them. Began to teach his disciples, and then by extension, he began to teach the people around him. We know he's going to teach because he sits down. Sitting down in Judaism is a position of authority in teaching. It's al-kathedra, to sit in the seat of Moses, to sit in the prominent seat of teaching with authority. And so how does he kick it off? He says, blessed are the poor in spirit. He goes through all these blessings, that you're blessed if you live this way as opposed to this other way, you know? Blessed are those who are poor in spirit. My golly, that's crazy, right? Because we wouldn't think that that would be a blessing. And yet he says, those who are poor in spirit, you have a God who is more than willing to fill you. That wherever you feel impoverished, wherever you feel marginalized, wherever you feel like there's not enough, you have a God who supplies enough. And then he goes down to the bottom, about halfway through Matthew chapter 5, and he says, you're the salt of the earth. You're the light of the world. He's telling his listeners, listen, I've just told you who you have access to. You have access to the Father who wants to bless you richly. Now, this is who you are in light of that. In light of that fact, this is who you are. You are salt and you are light. And then he addresses all the things that they've heard that tell them to live counter to that. He begins to say, you've heard it said, but I tell you. You've heard it said, but I tell you. If you go through Matthew chapter 5, you can begin to underline at the beginning of all those paragraphs. You've heard it said, but I tell you. You've heard it said again, but I tell you. And so he's saying, listen, you've heard one way to do things, but I'm going to tell you a better way to do things. I'm going to tell you God's way to do things because you're salt and you're light. And the way that you've heard to do things is actually working against you being salt and light. And so in Matthew chapter 5 and verse 21, which I think is so important for us in this time when we want to divide, when we want to become suspicious of our brothers and sisters, when we want to look for what is wrong instead of looking what is right, when we want to point people towards everything but God, Jesus comes and he says, you've heard it said to those of old. Why do you think he says to those of old?
It's tradition. That was a big thing with them.
Okay, it was tradition. Okay. I love that you said that. You know why? Because just because something is tradition doesn't mean it's right, and just because something old doesn't mean that it's good. Mm-hmm. Because he says, you heard that it was said to those of old. Now he's going to correct that. So he's correcting it. He's saying, you think that tradition is right? Then he begins and he says, you shall not murder. So he takes the tradition and he brings it right alongside what?
Commandment.
Right alongside God's words, the Ten Commandments. He says, you got tradition, but let's talk about what God says. Let's talk about the implications of what God says. Let's talk about the importance of what God says. The very thing that I kind of kicked off here to say is exactly what Jesus is saying here. And he said, whoever murders will be liable of judgment. And I think all of his crowd right then would have said, yes, if you murder somebody, you're going to get judged. You are liable for judgment. You're right. But Jesus is going to take it deeper because what causes murder? Generally, people don't wake up in the morning and go, you know what I think I'm going to do today? I think I'm going to pick up a dozen eggs, a gallon of milk. I'm going to go to the post office and I'm going to kill somebody. There is something that is a driver for that, isn't there? There's an underlying emotion. There's an underlying volition that drives that. And that's what Jesus is going to get at. Because Jesus says, listen, you want to address the problem, but are you willing to address the problem that leads to the problem? In fact, that when Jesus is going to address a lot of the things in Matthew chapter 5, that's what he's going to address. He's going to say, listen, you think this is the problem, but the problem is actually deeper than that. There's actually a problem that leads to the problem. He says, but I say to you, listen to that voice of authority of Jesus. But I say to you, Jesus is saying, listen, I'm going to tell you the better way to do this. And Jesus, we know, is the authoritative word of God. He's the word made flesh. So he's going to come and he's going to tell us what God thinks about this. And he says, but I say to you that everyone, so this applies to who?
Everyone.
Yeah, there's not one person this doesn't apply to. But I say to you that everyone who is angry. That's fascinating, isn't it? Because it says everyone who is angry. Does everyone get angry?
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
At one time or another.
Yeah. So there's nobody who can say, this isn't about me. This isn't for me. I don't need this. There's nobody who can zone out unless you're showing the hardness of your own heart in this moment. Because this applies to everyone. I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother. I love the way Jesus words this because Jesus says everyone gets angry. And who do we tend to get most angry with? The people who are connected to us. He doesn't say, but I say to you that everyone who is angry with that guy on the road that you don't even know. He says that all of us are connected. By using the word brother, he says all of us are connected. All of us are in this together. That guy who you're angry with way over there is connected to your life somehow and in some way. I mean, aren't you guys ever shocked when you find out how connected you really are to people? Like you meet somebody and then you realize, oh my gosh, I know that person over there. I'll tell a story. Yesterday I was in the coffee shop and I'm doing my work in the coffee shop. I got my earbuds in and all of a sudden this young African-American girl comes up and she's like shoves her phone in my face and she says, is this you? And I said, yeah. And that's my wife. And she goes, okay. Because your wife wanted me to come and tell you hi because I volunteer at Mercy's Refuge and I volunteer under your wife. And she said, if you were here at the coffee shop, because you usually are, I should come and say hi to you. And so I'm like, oh, wow, this young girl in the coffee shop, now I know her because my wife knows her. But it's even deeper than that because I get home and my wife says, oh, yeah, her dad, he plays the piano. I said, what's her last name? She goes, oh, that really doesn't matter. It's Brown. And I go, you mean her dad is Huntley Brown? Who plays piano for Billy Graham? Billy Graham and his son, right, Mark? Yeah. And I go, you mean Nadia is Huntley Brown's daughter? Oh, yeah. Yeah, she was playing the piano at Mercy's Refuge. It was really cool. And it's just like you don't even realize how connected you are. That in that coffee shop, I was standing with somebody who stands with somebody who stood with Billy Graham. That wasn't even 5 degrees of separation. Like, we are connected in ways that we don't know and don't even comprehend. So we ought to be very careful how we judge or what we think about the other people because we're connected to them and they're connected to us. But I say to you that everyone who is angry, everybody gets angry, and we are all connected with his brother, will be liable of judgment. He says every one of us who doesn't consider our brothers and sisters properly, those who we are connected with and don't even understand how we're connected, are liable of judgment for the actions that we take against them. Whoever insults, that was that word that you used, hadraka, which means like in the Hebrew, bonehead. Whoever insults his brother will be liable to the council, and whoever says, you fool, will be liable to the hell of fire. And so Jesus says right here, he goes, listen, you're going to get angry, but you need to consider something bigger and larger, and that is that we are all in this together, and our actions and reactions have implications for us and for everybody around us. But then he takes it even a level deeper, because he says this in verse 23. So if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you. Now listen, he's talking to us here today. He's talking to believers. He's talking to people then. He's talking to believers today. When we go to worship God, we worship in what? What does Jesus say in John? We worship in spirit and?
Truth.
Truth.
So when I read this, there is no way that when you go to the altar and worship in spirit and truth, that God will not prompt to your mind that you have something against your brother. That spirit inside you will convict you and go, what about that guy? What about that anger that you're holding in? What about that thing that you're holding against that person? What a weight. Why are you allowing that to just drag you down? It's hindering your worship. Not only that, but you're coming to worship in such a false way because you have hatred in your heart. And those feelings that you have in your heart put you in danger of an even greater sin. And so what's really fascinating here is Jesus is going to say that unity is actually more important than worship. Because if you don't have unity, you can't truly worship. It's just hollow worship. And he even says this in verse 24, leave your gift there at the altar and go. Go. That's directly, quickly. The word there is hupago. Everybody say hupago.
Hupago.
Yeah. That means go right away, right to them directly. Don't stop anywhere else along the way. And be reconciled to your brother and then come and offer your gift. Now the hope I think that Jesus is actually alluding to here is that when you return to the altar, you'll return to the altar with your brother. And you and your brother will be able to worship in spirit and in truth to the living God who reconciled all things to himself, including the relationship of you and your brother. He says, come to terms quickly with your accuser while you're going. Jesus is going to say exactly what Ephesians 4, 26 and 27 says, which says, don't let the sun go down on your anger. Why? Because when you wake up tomorrow, it'll be greater than it was the day before. And we need to take seriously unity because Jesus says that you can't worship fully unless you fully embrace your brothers and sisters, unless you take that thing that you're holding in your heart and you give it to God and you reconcile with your brother and sister so that you can actually and truly, in a profound way, come before the person of God and worship him fully. So what's at stake here? Jesus is telling them worship is at stake, an honest, real sense of worship. Now, we don't just see Jesus talk about this here. Actually, he talks about it in Matthew chapter 18 too, doesn't he? He says in Matthew chapter 18, beginning in verse 15, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him. What word is that in Hebrew? We already said it once. It is hupago. Everybody say hupago. That word appears again here. It connects these two teachings of Jesus. Jesus says, if your brother sins against you, go and tell him. Go right away to him. Just between you and him. That means you don't go to Facebook. You don't go to social media. You don't go to your other friend. You know how we like to do where we're like, I'm just calling you because I really need to talk to Tom. But before I talk to Tom, I need some advice on how to talk to Tom. Let me tell you 10 ways Tom stinks.
Or we bring it up in the prayer.
Oh, yeah. Or we go to the prayer meeting and we go, can you all just pray for Tom because he's such an idiot. Just between you and him. By the way, it's not just between you and him, is it? It's between you, him, and who?
God.
Exactly. Because the hope is that you're going to talk to this person. You're going in the wisdom of God with the Spirit of God. You're going to seek reconciliation, which is what God would have you seek. And he says, go to him alone. If he listens to you, you've gained yourself a brother. You've regained a brother. You've renewed this love for one another. You're in this together. You identify that. He says, but if he does not listen, take one or two along with you. Now, when it says take one or two along with you, that means take one or two trusted and wise people who can be unbiased and who can understand what truth is. Don't take along two people who are on your side. This is why I think this flies so countercultural. Because if I have a problem with somebody, first of all, the last thing I tend to do is just go to them, just me and him. And the second thing is when I bring a couple people along, I make sure they're on my side. Is anybody with me?
I know.
That's what we tend to do. Yep. Mm-hmm. The Bible here wants us to take people with us who are wise and who are trusted and who can be trusted to be unbiased, who can look at the situation and can turn and go, Jason, I actually think you're wrong also. Because my grandmother used to say this. She used to say, there's never just one guilty party. She said, there's usually more than one. She said, but, you know, maybe it's 60-40, maybe it's 80-20. Who knows? But we own a little bit of it. And have you ever had a conversation where you've tried to reconcile something, and as the person sharing it with you, what they're feeling and what their perception of that was, you go, I didn't even think about that. I didn't even know you saw it that way. Oh my gosh, I'm sorry. I didn't realize that. I didn't realize I had done that. Then Jesus says, but if he does not listen, take two or three along with you, that every charge may be established by the evidence of two or three witnesses. By the way, the two or three witnesses, we see that constantly being used in Scripture. Scripture always bears witness to itself two or three times. This is God's way of doing things. God says it's not just about one witness. It's about having multiple witnesses to the truth. Verse 17, if he refused to listen. Now, listen, this is showing the hard-heartedness of a person. And we'll come across that. If he refuses to listen to them, tell it to the church. That means tell it to a greater body of more wise and unbiased and God-fearing people. And if he refuses to listen, even to the church, they'll let him to be to you as a Gentile or tax collector. Now, what I want you to notice here, and that seems pretty harsh, doesn't it? But again, it doesn't say, and if he refuses to listen to you at that point, after you tell the church, then put up billboards, talk about him on social media, tell everybody why he stinks, do all that. No, it doesn't do that. You know what they did with Gentiles and tax collectors? They just didn't pay any attention to them. They just didn't pay any attention to them. And we are sometimes so given to fighting battles that we just need to stop paying attention to. Hard-hearted people who we need to go, you know what? We've tried every way possible to reconcile this relationship, and it's irreconcilable, and that's okay, so now I'm just not going to pay attention to it. And maybe God will make a way somewhere down the road where reconciliation can happen again. I actually think at some point down the road, God will go, maybe you need to go back to them, just you and him. Maybe we need to look at the process again. But I think that sometimes we get to that point and we just let that thing eat at our craw, don't we? We let it eat at us and we think we got to fight that battle and we got to win that battle. And you're never going to win that battle with that hard-hearted person. Sometimes you need to just forgive them, not so that you set them free, but so that you set yourself free. You just say, you know what, God? I forgive them. It's fine. They can go their own way. I'm not going to endeavor to give myself to that anymore because I got more important work to do, and that's loving other people. And then he says, whatever, truly, truly, I say to you, whatever you bind on earth shall be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth shall be loosed in heaven. What he's saying is the implications for how you live on earth has implications for heaven. And then he says this at the end, and we just got to touch on this. We only got another minute or so. For where two or three are gathered in my name, there I am amongst you. I think it's important that we talk about this just really quick, because I've heard this verse used all the time for prayer gatherings, for teaching, for all kinds of things. Where two are gathered, he's with us. Well, here's the problem. This verse is not meant for prayer gatherings. This verse is not meant for teaching moments. This verse is meant for discipline. And what God is saying here is that as you're going through this process, just remember that I'm there with you. Just remember that I'm right there with you. We don't have a God who stands with us apart from the conflict, but a God who stands with us in the midst of the conflict. By the way, right after we get done with this part in Matthew chapter 5, we're going to go into Matthew chapter 6, and we're going to get into the Lord's Prayer, right? And what does the Lord's Prayer remind us of? That no matter where we are and what we go through, the Lord is with us. He's our daily bread. He is there constantly and consistently with us, offering himself to us in the most difficult of situations. And so that was one part of what it looks like to walk through conflict in the way of Jesus. I'm looking forward, next week we'll look at John chapter 8 and how Jesus does that there.
So join us at the same time next week. And if you missed a portion of today's broadcast or want to listen to it again or pass it on to a friend, stop by greatnewsradio.org or wluj.org. Click on the Mark and Friends link, and you can right-click on the program and send it on to a friend in an email. Thank you, Pastor Jason and friends, for joining us for this discussion through Matthew. I was trying to find a verse in James. When we confront somebody in sin, we also do it with tenderness and with care, looking for their best interest to have them turn away from their sin. And there's a method of doing it where you have sensitivity because you want to turn them away from the sinful nature or their sinful practice. We want to be cognizant of the fact that people are at different places in their faith journey. We want to be praying before we confront them, even though it's very important that we point out the sin. We love them as a child of God, and we try to nurture them towards godly things. Well, thanks for listening. Thanks for being a part of our radio listening family. This is Mark Burns with the Ministry of Great News Media. God bless you, and have a great day, night, and weekend.